Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Russia's unprovoked invasion of Ukraine has lasted much longer than Russia first anticipated. The leaders there thought it would be over just a few days, and they would have captured the capital of Ukraine, and they would have ended it. But now Russia is not seeing that, and their economy is damaged. Russian troops are suffering major casualties. Ukraine has also seen incredible losses, but it has the support of the United States and NATO, and it seems like that's going to be or locked into a stalemate for some time now that we're into the winter months in Ukraine. But is now the time to call for peace? How do you think that this war should end? What type of support do you think that Ukraine needs and you want to give them? We're joined by Katrina Vandenhoevel. She is the editor, director, and publisher of The Nation, weekly columnist for The Washington Post. And Katrina, welcome to The Source.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you for having me on.
So you write, we need to end the war in Ukraine, and we need to sit down, and we need to talk now. Now is the time. So tell us more.
You know, first of all, as you said, this is an illegal, brutal assault entering. We're going to be at a year, February 2023. And Ukrainian stirring resistance to the Russian invasion is something we all mark. But it shouldn't blind us to the horrendous cost in lives and property. At the moment, the country, Ukraine, is dealing with rolling blackouts. A staggering close to 30% of Ukraine's people have reportedly been displaced. If the war drags on, that will grow. Furthermore, the protracted war in Ukraine, the longer it goes on, the greater risk of a nuclear accident or incident. There are many people who believe, Dave, and I'm, you know, maybe they're right that you need to send more weapons and Ukraine needs to be stronger before it sits at a table with third-party negotiators or perhaps repeating the Minsk Accords, which were in play before the Russian invasion with Germany, France, Ukraine, and Russia trying to find some sovereignty and just peace for Ukraine. But it may be that people feel there are more weapons that need to be shipped before the process of any ceasefire toward a negotiation, toward a armistice could happen. But I will say that it's worth remembering that the impact on Europe, the global South, and the world is already profound, the impact of this brutal war. And I think, you know, as climate action is sidelined in a way, as reliance on fossil fuels increase, food scarcity, other resource demands, you know, it's an extraordinary, challenging time. And there are perhaps more displaced people, refugees, than at any time since the end of World War II. Dave, one issue, and I'll stop, is that too often negotiation is viewed as appeasement. This war will end somehow. How it ends is something to be discussed very seriously. And I do think the White House, perhaps the impetus of military people, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, head, other generals who are closer to battle, and see lives being ripped apart in all countries, Russia, Ukraine, and there are other forces inside Ukraine, NATO, Western forces, maybe closer to saying, let's try and find a way out of this before it escalates even more dangerously.
Let's take a caller. Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK, and we have Jose. Jose, you're on the air.
Thank you. It's good to hear a voice of reason now, and let's hope that nobody labels this individual as a Putin propagandist. Now, the United States should immediately withdraw military aid from Ukraine, give them humanitarian aid. We're going to be stuck with that forever. But let's stop the militarism. If we continue to ramp up military shipments to Ukraine, that's going to determine whether Odessa falls, all right? And that determines the length in which Russia will go, and forget about the Minsk Accords or going back to them. They will be gone. If we escalate even further and Russia goes into Odessa, we don't know what negotiations are going to look like, and I predict that the negotiations will not be in Ukraine's favor.
Jose, thank you for your call. So, Katrina, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, please. First of all, I want to thank your caller for, you know, suggesting my voice is reasoned, but also, you know, part of what's happened in this country in the last years prior to this brutal war is that those who raise questions about our current policy toward Russia or China, but toward Russia, are called Putin puppets. It seems to me an attempt to kind of slur a point of view that deserves to be heard. What's going to happen in the next weeks, Dave, is you're going to have a Republican House. And this House, I read somewhere that contrary to your caller's good point about humanitarian aid, where is that in the mix of the close to $40 billion that has been shipped to Ukraine, mostly arms? The more weapons that come in, the Republican Party wants to cut humanitarian aid and send more military aid, which I think is folly, but also is trying to pass legislation, which I don't think is folly, how to monitor the sending of weapons. How do we know where they've gone to? Are they in the hands of Ukrainians? Or as we learned in Afghanistan, there's an active market of trafficking. There's a lot of weapons awash in that country. Now, Russia, of course, has, you know, barbarically kind of used the playbook they used in two Chechen wars, raising a country, Ukraine, obviously larger than Chechnya. But I do agree that the humanitarian piece is in, you know, I think Ukrainians' interest. I wouldn't speak for Ukraine generally, but also this country's interest. I don't want to. I want to speak for those who seek an alternative way. I understand.
But Ukraine is asking for these weapons. We're not sending weapons to Ukraine and they don't want them.
No, they want them very badly. But so I think you listen to that. But the idea that only Ukraine can negotiate, that has not been the case in history. I mean, to outsource U.S. diplomacy to, that's partly what's going on. And I think you can understand, how can you not understand the hatred?
Well, let's hear from, this is a clip from President Zelensky of Ukraine that he issued to this speech he gave to the UN 2 months ago.
Ukraine wants peace. Europe wants peace. The world wants peace. And we have seen who is the only one who wants war. There is only one entity among all UN member states who would say now, if he could interrupt my speech, that he's happy with this war, with his war. And this is the first item of our peace formula, comprehensive item, punishment. Punishment for the crime of aggression, punishment for violation of borders and territorial integrity. Punishment that must be in place until the internationally recognized border is restored, until the aggression stops, and until the damages and losses for the war are fully compensated.
Is Zelensky being unreasonable here?
You know, Zelensky ran for leader of Ukraine on a peace ticket. He was ready to negotiate some version of the Minsk Accords. There is a story that Boris Johnson of the UK, the former prime minister, visited and persuaded Zelensky not to proceed with any negotiations. But he did run as a, quote, peace candidate, trying to end the ongoing, prior to the Russian war, the ongoing targeting of Ukrainians in eastern Ukraine, in the Donetsk and Luhansk and those areas, the Donbass. He has of course he has the right, the purpose, the power to ask for more weapons. Is that going to resolve the situation? Will that lead to a more whole, free Ukraine? In fact, there are others in the world, and I'm just reporting, who are not on board with this war, as is NATO. in the global South, in Central America, South America, in Africa. So it's a little bit, it's not quite what Zelensky says, but the seeking of weapons, how can you deny? On the other hand, you can argue it doesn't contribute to a peace that will be real and whole.
So do you want to end the sending arms and weapons to Ukraine? And then what do you think would happen?
I think you have to take the ongoing situation to a negotiation. You're not going to just cut off. First of all, the weapons are in the pipeline. In fact, there's a scramble for more weapons because so much has been shipped that there's going back to, you know, manufacturing lines for more. There are only really four countries at the moment who are as equipped to really send weapons. Spain, I think, Italy, Germany, France, and the Netherlands. Other countries are tapped out. I do think there's concern, and this was a turning point about 2 or 3 weeks ago, when that weapon was in it fell into Poland and killed two people. And the rush to call it a Russian weapon terrified, I think, the White House and some NATO members, because if one NATO member is attacked, Article 5, collective security, all members are involved. And I think the rush on Zelensky's part and some others to call it a Russian weapon, when in fact it wasn't, impacted the White House's thinking about the need to begin to find a way to exit this war.
Okay, so let's take a break. Our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And I do want to hear the answer to the question, what would happen if we ended the armament of Ukraine as they fight off the invasion of Russia? What do you think the result of that would be? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas's largest research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're discussing ending the Russian-Ukraine war. Is now the time to end the shipments of weapons from NATO and from the United States to Ukraine as they are fighting to defend their country from invasion from Russia? We're joined by Katrina Vandenhuvel. She is the editorial director and publisher of The Nation, weekly columnist for The Washington Post. Let's go ahead and this is a clip from President Biden speaking 2 months ago at the United Nations about this.
Putin claims he had to act because Russia was threatened. But no one threatened Russia. And no one other than Russia sought conflict. In fact, we warned it was coming. And with many of you, we worked to try to avert it. Putin's own words make his true purpose unmistakable. Just before he invaded, Putin asserted, and I quote, Ukraine was created by Russia and never had, quote, real statehood. And now we see attacks on schools, railway stations, hospitals, one on centers of Ukrainian history and culture. In the past, even more horrifying evidence of Russia's atrocity and war crimes. Mass graves uncovered in Izium.
Let's go to a caller. We have Michael on the line. And Michael, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Thank you for taking my call, y'all. And I really appreciate you speaking on this subject. An observation that I was interested in and curious to the callers is early on in the war, there was questions about providing air support and planes to fend off the Russian invasion, even within the borders of Ukraine. I think that maybe that will war, and I would be interested to see where we would be if we would have gone that route or if we would have escalated, as indeed was surmised. Thank you.
All right, Michael, you cut in and out there, but Katrina, he was talking about if the United States had supplied stronger air support, would that have ended this earlier, or should we do that now?
I don't think it would have ended. Let me just step back, if I could, for a minute. I mean, any settlement is going to demand withdrawal of Russian forces. It may be in exchange for Ukrainian neutrality, but what's key is that the country be sovereign and whole, and that what preserves a settlement that preserves the sovereignty of Ukraine, but that also ends the war, is what would be sought. Not the barbarism of the weapons and the use of weapons on both sides is already clear. I mean, it's hard to know how much more can be raised, destroyed. There was a debate about what kind of weapons to ship to Ukraine. It's escalated in the sense of more and more high-powered weapons have been provided. I believe, and I'm not a military expert, that there's a kind of resistance to moving to the weapons your caller described for fear of escalating into Russia. And, you know, Biden has certainly laid down that no American men or women will fight. The weapons become a proxy, but I think there's still resistance to higher level weapons. It's not clear if that would resolve things or make more bloody what is already this cruel and brutal war.
So there are people who
I really think more weapons, there's an emotional need to want more weapons because there is such brutality. Now, Russia, by the way, as you noted, Dave, thought this would be a week. They've proved how weak their military is, how demoralized their troops are, how ill-equipped their troops are. And I, you know, the impact inside Russia, by the way, is being felt in regional communities where young men are coming back in zinc coffins, as they did during Afghanistan. So there is an awareness and impact, even with state TV control, the internet is more free. But again, I come back to Zelensky, who really did seek a different outcome at the beginning. And as the violence of the war spreads, his position has rightly or understandably hardened.
So people say, of course, that there's no excuse for Putin to invade Ukraine. But they say that NATO was encroaching. Ukraine was talking about joining NATO or the EU. Yep. And so that was the provocation. But there was, and I'm sure you know all about this, the 2002 Rome Agreement that Putin himself signed, which would say that these countries that were on Russia's border would not be mobilized, would not have U.S. troops and armament. They wouldn't be.
Yes.
And then it was Putin who violated that himself in 2008 when he invaded Georgia. So that's what's brought about.
The situation is much more complicated than just invading.
But it still violated the agreement.
But let me say that the de-democratization that we so clearly see in Russia, and it's squandered the possibility that Gorbachev, who died a few months ago, offered. But Yeltsin, who was a favorite of Clinton and his administration, began the process of de-democratization. Anyone in leadership inside Russia, whether Yeltsin, Putin, Gorbachev, did not want to see NATO expand after the fall of the Berlin Wall. And there is material and documentation that Gorbachev was kind of duped. He never got a signed treaty, but that the expansion of NATO eastward after the unification of Germany was off the table. Then in George W. Bush times, not only does John Bolton take a lead in repealing the anti-ballistic missile treaty, which was the foundation of arms control, which is now destroyed in a sense, but also NATO began to move eastward and eastward and eastward, and you surround and ring Russia with NATO. I'm not saying it's the only understand it.
All right,
one
let's go to some callers.
I want to get not condone, but understand.
I just want to get a public voices in on this, and we have Tom. Tom, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just don't see the benefit of not providing weapons to Ukraine. My fear is that he'll just do again. We've already had negotiations. We've already had a settlement. The world turned a blind eye to what he did in 2014, and here we are again.
All right, Tom, thank you for that. So, Katrina, can we accept that Putin is not a good faith actor? He is an aggressor, and he cannot be trusted.
Listen, you don't trust in international politics. You don't have friends. You have interests, and you trust but verify, as Gorbachev used to say, or Reagan used to say. Reagan called the Soviet Union the evil empire. He then had a partner in Gorbachev to change the nature of relations. There are many leaders. What Putin has done has shown that he is a leader of a war of aggression. It's not equating things, but there are other countries which have participated in wars of aggression. You don't trust Putin. You ensure that there's some arrangement where the sovereignty of Ukraine is guaranteed, whether it's a kind of NATO II. And the oddity of what we're talking about is Ukraine, as it's currently constituted, does not meet the provisions of NATO membership, nor does it meet EU. But the ability to keep Ukraine sovereign and whole is going to be done in different ways and more weapons.
But wasn't the real threat to Russia was the fact of having a actual democracy on their doorstep compared to...
No. Please. I mean, every country has its own dynamics. Ukraine, Mr. Poroshenko, the chocolate oligarch, he was elected, but there's illiberal democracy too. Ukraine has a record of corruption, as does Russia. It has its oligarchs, as does Russia. Ukraine and Zelensky has found its Winston Churchill, all power to it. But do not kind of seek to make Ukraine the shining democracy on the corruption, transparency, international list.
Well, compared to Putin.
Well, compared to Russia, I mean.
Yeah.
But on the
other
hand,
I'm trying to get one more caller in on this so their voices are important.
The Ukrainian oligarchs never met. Putin took on the oligarchs in the first few years of his reign. Right. That ended and he created his own. Ukraine has never had a reckoning with its oligarchs.
Let's go to Jay on the phones. And Jay, you're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say that I think it's a little bit naive to think that negotiation without weapons will somehow get a lasting peace. After we ignored Chechnya, we had the diplomatic reset after 2008 in Georgia, and we completely let them get away with Crimea and Donbass in 2014. Russia signed the Minsk agreements and violated them, just like they violated the Budapest Memorandum, and they feigned participation in the Normandy format negotiations even as recently as like 2 weeks before the invasion. If you want negotiation, you need to propose a way to get Russia on board, because Russia has had the opportunity to de-escalate over and over again, and it's them who's chosen war. And with regards to NATO expanding, these countries asked to join NATO. NATO didn't expand eastward. These countries asked to join because they knew Russia was a threat.
Jay, thank you for that. I want to go straight to another caller. We have Jewel, and Jewel, you're on the air.
Yes. Putin had 20% of Ukraine, and he invaded anyway. Now, how could you tell me this man wants peace? I want you to hear something about that.
All right, Jewel, thank you for that. We appreciate your call. So, Katrina, I appreciate that you want to have talks. We want to have peace. We have to keep that open and as an option. We have to continue to talk about that.
You know, I think in the terms of this, you know, President Obama said something heretical. He said Ukraine is not a vital national security interest of the United States. It is of Russia, but put that aside. If someone said that today, they'd be driven off the stage. I'm not saying Putin wants peace. I'm simply arguing maybe you do need more weapons than have been shipped to get to a table or some form of negotiation. But maybe it's already so awash in weapons that it is time to take a measure of some possible negotiation. And maybe it's an armistice, as we have in Korea.
What about a Christmas armistice?
You said it. It's not a bad idea.
If they could just stop shelling and sending missiles into Ukraine for the holidays.
I agree. And the winter has come. And general winter is pretty cruel.
And Putin's weaponizing winter.
Putin is weaponizing winter. The Economist just reported that more people in Europe may die of security problems than soldiers in Ukraine and Russia.
But if we stop him now.
Yeah.
All right, stop him now. All right, Katrina Vanden Heuvel is the editorial director.
You.
It was great to have you. We need to talk about peace. We need to keep the lines of communication open. We also have to be realistic. Katrina, thank you so much.
Realism and restraint. Thank you.
Publisher of The Nation, weekly columnist for The Washington Post. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Dallas Williams and Megan Halbadier Moore, with production assistance provided by Mark Hutchison. Dan Katz is TPR's news director. Support for The Source comes from contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.